This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks in Concord, New Hampshire. And thanks to the folks at New Hampshire Public Radio for their help in producing today's coverage. Later this evening, seven candidates seeking the Republican nomination for president will debate just down the road from here at St. Anselm's College in Manchester. There will be a number of politically significant storylines to follow. Chief among them, this will be the first time Mitt Romney, the presumed frontrunner, will be facing his Republican opponents since he officially announced that he's running for president.
We're going to spend the rest of the show talking about the debate and the shape of the presidential race so far in New Hampshire, home to the all-important first-in-the-nation primary. Anthony, you've been up in New Hampshire for the past couple days. I mean, this early, are people really paying attention to the race?
It's always surprising, isn't it, Meghna? It always seems like it's earlier and earlier. I was talking to a state rep yesterday over in Hillsborough County near Peterborough, and he said, hey, don't forget, we elect all of our state reps and our governor every 2 years here. So in a way, it's always campaign season in New Hampshire. And of course, they take their role as the first in the nation primary pretty seriously up here. But the average voter, probably not paying attention. But the political elite, the candidates, the staffs, you know, there are seven or eight candidates crisscrossing the state. So, yeah, you're aware that there's a presidential election primary season has begun.
It's hard not to bump into someone from a campaign, I'm sure, even by now. Give us a sense of who and what you've been seeing.
Okay, so yesterday I spent some time over in Hillsborough County in the little town of Greenfield. They have this annual celebration of Flag Day run by the Republican Party there. And Tim Pawlenty, the former governor of Minnesota, showed up. Herman Cain, the conservative businessman of Godfather's Pizza fame, they were there. And so that was it. And there was a sense of, you know, this is a part of these many events that happen across the state in living rooms, in town halls, you know, a few dozen people show up. And that was what was going on yesterday, a real sign, I guess, that this primary campaign season has begun.
Well, you mentioned, Anthony, you mentioned Tim Pawlenty. He's being talked about already as the candidate who may pose the biggest threat to former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney. How is he being received in particular?
Well, it's true. The folks that I talked to who you would think would be in favor of Romney, and I want to be clear, many are, but the sort of moderate Granite State Republicans, sort of fiscal conservatives, social liberals, those that haven't sort of developed a passion for Mitt Romney, shall we say, seem to be giving Pawlenty a look. I spoke to him briefly, and this will be an interesting storyline coming out of tonight's debate, and that is Governor Romney's approach to health care in Massachusetts. Listen to what he said.
Well, I just responded to a question on a show this morning about the similarities between the president's plan and the Massachusetts plan, but I just commented that it's obvious, and President Obama said in his own words that he patterned Obamacare after the health care plan in Massachusetts and merged it, those two things together to form Obamacare, or as I called it, Obamacare.
Governor Romney, sort of the front runner here. You guys are sort of cut from the same cloth in a certain way. How do you distinguish yourself from him? Former governor, moderate Republican, you got to obviously distinguish yourself in some way.
That cloth that he's cut from is a little different, I suppose. But
tell us how.
Yeah, no. Well, you know, everybody's going to have their own background and life story, and not that mine's any different or better than anybody else's, but it is different. So I grew up in a blue-collar town and had a, you know, kind of an up-from-your-bootstrap story, which I think a lot of people find helpful to understand who are you, what do you believe, where do you come from. Number two, everybody's got a different record. Mine's really good. The Cato Institute gave me an A grade. During my last 2 years as governor, there's very few governors in the country who got that, and the others aren't running for president.
Poll today in the Boston Globe done by the University of New Hampshire Survey Center shows that New Hampshire Republicans basically a pretty moderate bunch overall. They don't favor high taxes on people earning between $50,000 and $250,000. They do favor higher taxes on the high earners. What do you say to that? Are you moderate enough to appeal to this moderate brand of Republicanism in the Northeast?
I governed as a conservative in one of the more liberal states in the country and did so successfully. I got elected and reelected in the state of Minnesota. That'd be like being a conservative in Vermont. So I not only have the record and results of moving towards lower taxes, lower spending, more conservative judges and the like, but I also know how to do that in a place that's not fully conservative. And I was able to move my state from a liberal state to something that's more common sense and mainstream. And that's by offering real solutions to real problems. And that's what I did in Minnesota. And I think that's what would sell in New England and New Hampshire included.
So that's former Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty speaking yesterday in Greenfield, Magna. And did you notice this new term, Obamacare?
Yeah, I wonder if his political strategist thought that was easier to say than Rambamacare. That's my other version there. But obviously trying to paint Governor Mitt Romney as the one who brought us President Obama's national health care. But how was that argument that Tim Pawlenty made received by voters or potential voters in New Hampshire?
Well, I think it resonated. This was a fairly conservative group of people in Greenfield that I spoke to yesterday. Every one of them began the discussion about health care. So clearly this is going to be a theme that Mitt Romney's critics are going to bring up and hammer him on tonight. And it's also a theme that you hear from the more conservative folks. And I wanted to play a bit of tape. I spent some time yesterday with some Tea Party folks up there in Hillsborough County. We're going to hear from Skip Murphy, who published a conservative blog called GraniteRock.com, Tim Flaherty of Milford, Bob DeMora of Peterborough, and Liz Christopherson, an uncommitted Republican political consultant from Hollis, and we'll hear her first. What's the most important issue? Let me start with you, Liz. What's the most important issue?
Jobs and the economy. And I believe that the next president needs to be someone who not only understands what needs to happen, but can articulate that to the American people and that will also follow through on campaign promises and things that have been said.
Gentlemen, Liz sort of puts out jobs, the economy is the number one issue. Do you guys agree? Let me start with you, Skip.
I think certainly jobs is one thing that has to be addressed, but it's not just jobs, period. It's a whole system of things that has to be changed in that you've got to get rid of the overregulation. They just passed over 80,000 new regulations this past year. We've got the uncertainty of what government's going to do next, not only because of that amount, vast amount of regulation, but also the new taxes that people don't know who run businesses. What am I going to get hit with now? We see a Chicago way of doing politics, which is, as President Obama said, we're going to make nice with our friends and punish our enemies. And we see government under his leadership picking which laws to enforce and not, and which industries to make winners and losers. And people cannot plan for that, so people are just sitting on their haunches doing nothing. And until that uncertainty, until the real rule of law comes back into play, you're going to see this economy go nowhere, and you're going to see this country decline.
So, Skip, you're a limited government guy, it sounds like.
Absolutely.
Tom, say something about the economy and the need for change and what you think needs to happen and what a presidential candidate would do for you.
People looking to the federal government to fix this problem, they're looking for a candidate. I'm not looking for someone who's going to fix this problem. I'm looking for someone who's going to get in and pull the government back. I don't think they can fix the problem, even if Republicans take the House, Senate, and presidency. We had that for a number of years last decade, and we didn't get there. It needs to be the right people who see the Constitution as the rule of law and to form the government around that, which is the way it was designed. The government isn't going to fix this problem. They have to pull back and get out of the way and let the free market fix this problem.
Liz, do you agree with that, this role of limited government, or is there a positive role that government can play in helping turn people's lives around?
I believe absolutely I agree with the limited government stance. I'm just as conservative as these gentlemen here. There are certain roles that the government must play. And I do agree that there's an important question that needs to be asked, and is this something that the government should be doing, and if so, at what level? And those are primary questions that I would expect the leaders in Congress and the president to be asking. And I think that the answer will be, in a number of cases, that this isn't something that the government should be doing, and we need to get out of it.
When you say this, you're talking about figuring out managing the economy, or what, as Skip said, picking winners and losers?
Many roles. There are many roles that the government has taken on that are unconstitutional and inappropriate.
I mean, can I make a quick analogy here?
Yeah,
this
sure.
is what I use with my family and friends who are not conservative or not politically inclined, let's say. I use the NBA as an example, right? If the referees had a stake in the arena, the profits of the arena, if they were representing players, if they owned the parking lot, if they owned part of the TV contract, do you think we would have a fair NBA system where the referees were regulating the game, so to speak, and making sure that it was being played fairly by the rules? We would not. And right now, the U.S. federal government are those referees that have a stake in the House, that have a stake in the players' contracts, that have a stake in the parking lot, in the TV revenues. They have their hands all over everything. There's too much influence and there's too much money flowing through Washington, D.C. We should spread it back down to the states and let them regulate what they're supposed to regulate, as it was designed by very intelligent people. That NBA analogy is exactly how I see it.
Rand Paul did a video as part of his U.S. Senate hearings a little while ago with one of the undersecretaries of Commerce, I think it was, and it's over two stupid little things. Why can't I buy an incandescent light bulb? And why is it that the federal government has to tell me how my toilet flushes? Now, on the surface level, those are two simply ridiculous things to talk about. But that's how far the federal government has gotten in to say, this is what we're going to do.
And well, let me push back there, though. Doesn't the federal government have some role in terms of environmental standards, fuel standards? I mean, the toilet flush sounds silly, but it's about conserving water, and it's about using technology that is environmentally efficient.
Shouldn't that be the local municipalities whose water supply is actually under duress or not? What fits out in Arizona, they may want to have very constrictive regulations for that particular area. Up here in New England, I have a well. It doesn't matter all that much to me. I pay the electrical bill to run the pump and all of that. So why is it that they have to do that? So it really comes down to the federal government trying to put a one-size-fits-all model on top of everything that perhaps just doesn't work. It's a case where the government has said, we know better than you what you need to do. We're telling you what to do, versus letting the open marketplace make that decision and let people say, it is now too expensive for me to afford a big car. I will choose to purchase a smaller car, rather than the government forcing me to do it, because they're basically saying, no big cars anymore.
So as we sit here today, I know there's a lot of folks like you who are still undecided, but the polls suggest Mitt Romney has an advantage so far, albeit with the 20 or 30% of folks who've made up their mind. Good choice for the Republicans?
She can't say a word.
I think all the candidates that we have in the race right now bring a lot to the table, each and every one of them.
But you don't want to answer directly about Mitt Romney?
I would prefer... Governor Romney is a fine candidate and certainly has expertise in the area of business and fixing the economy. There are other opinions, you know, with regard to some of the other issues that he's raised in the state of Massachusetts that may be of concern for some folks.
Healthcare, for example,
yes.
So is that the albatross around Mitt Romney's neck? Bob, let me come to you.
From my perspective, it's not, because I'm a believer in state sovereignty, so Mitt putting in health care in Massachusetts is right along the lines of my thinking. It's a state function. It's the function of the state to take care of their citizens, not the federal government. Obamacare is the abomination. That's the federal government trying to jam health care down everybody's throat.
So you buy, then, Mitt Romney's argument that he fixed a state problem with a state solution, and that's different from the federal health care reform?
Correct.
The choices that Mitt Romney made in Massachusetts don't go with my conservative beliefs, and I wonder, in the back of my mind, maybe the front of my mind sometimes, whether he's going to apply those same standards at the federal level, which he shouldn't be anyways, but he might try. We don't really know. You know, we don't know if he was acting in the Massachusetts vacuum or not. Yeah. To me, that's what's swirling around my mind right now with regard to Mitt Romney.
Yeah. And Skip, your views on Romney?
Absolutely not. Even though he had the right to, under state sovereignty, to put in that form of care for his citizens, at the individual level, again, you're seeing government saying, regardless of what you think, we're forcing you to buy a product or a service that you ordinarily wouldn't buy. Now, here's a case, once again, where the federal government created the problem back in 1986 when they passed a law that said hospitals have to provide free care. And that's a case where now they're trying to come around and say, well, we're trying to fix the problem of the free riders. Well, guys, you enabled these folks in the first place instead of depending on charitable organizations to take care of it. So for me, Romney is too much of a person who is going to continue, as I think Tom kind of alluded to, is going to use government to force people to change their behavior the way that he sees is the right way, rather than depending on the free marketplace and the people in that free marketplace saying, this is what's right for me.
But can the free market really ensure that everybody has the health care that they need? You talked about charitable institutions, for example. Is that really the way this should have happened?
I do definitely believe that government at this point, since the 40s, has been getting larger and larger and crowding out what used to be traditional charities, or has co-opted them because they so much depend on government tax money.
Last question, last issue, and get you all to chime in about this. Is New Hampshire, what's different this election cycle than 4 years ago? The Tea Party movement had some success in the midterm elections here. Are we looking at a Republican electorate in New Hampshire that is more conservative, more in line with what you guys have been, most of you have been talking about for the last 10 or 15 minutes here, or less? Let me start with you, Liz.
Well, I think that the motivated voter this time is going to be a more conservative voter than in 2008. The base, if you will, is energized. There's no question about that. And I believe it will be the more conservative undeclared voters that will be motivated to vote.
So based on that, then, it seems like that the candidate who is going to win, based on that analysis, is probably going to be more conservative. Do you think so?
Yes.
What about you, Bob?
Yeah, I think they have to be more conservative to make it through this time. There is a problem with the undeclareds pulling ballots, so it's hard to gauge that because
you mean a problem? It's hard to predict which way they're going to go.
Which way they're going to go, because those are the same folks that voted for Obama in 2008. But I don't think New Hampshire itself has changed all that much. On the southern tier, we've gotten a little liberal progressive down this end. They seem to come over the border. But our immigration laws aren't very good here, I guess, as we keep letting them in.
Well, I mean, that's the point that I was raising, because over the last, decade or decade and a half, there's been a lot of reporting. I've even done some reporting on this, that New Hampshire is becoming less conservative. But I'm wondering if we've sort of seen that checked a little bit. Tom, let me ask you.
I think it's become much more conservative since November. I'm not really sure if it will stay that way in 2012 or not. I really don't know. But I think people, like Liz said, people have woken up since early 2009. They really have come out and said, you know, I'm going to get active. I don't like what I'm seeing. I'm going to do something about it.
I'm Flaherty of Milford, that last voice we heard. We also heard from Liz Christofferson of Hollis, Skip Murphy of GraniteRock.com, and Bob DeMora of Peterborough.
So, Anthony, the folks you talked to, they seem to represent a pretty conservative political viewpoint in New Hampshire. But earlier you asked the question, I mean, to what extent will Tea Party energy in New Hampshire influence the upcoming primary? So what's your view now on that?
Well, there's sort of two views abroad in New Hampshire. If you talk to Andy Smith over at the UNH polling center, he says they're not going to have a big influence as time goes forward, that they represent such a small fraction of the voters in New Hampshire that will be diluted on primary day when a lot of people come out to vote. They are having an influence now, however. At the event yesterday, I picked four people at random. I think they were all Tea Party folks at that event, or most of them were. So as Liz Christofferson said, in the early going, these energized voters who are very much energized by the sort of Tea Party movement, you're going to hear a lot from them. And it remains to be seen how they're going to influence the folks running for the nomination. We'll see.
Well, listeners, stay with us, because Anthony is indeed up in Concord, New Hampshire. And when we return, we'll consider what's at stake in this evening's Republican debate in New Hampshire with our political roundtable.
And we'll be taking your questions and comments, so give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. I'm Anthony Brooks in Concord.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.